You're listening to Straight Talk with Dean and Mark. We appreciate you tuning in to one of our pre-recorded episodes.
There we go. Hey, how's it going there, Steven?
How are you, Mark?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
I'm good. I'm just trying to get used to this other room that I'm using here because it's another office, and the lighting is not as good as my other one, but it's not bad. I think I look okay. So
yeah, you look good.
you having a time trying to find a barber for your beard, huh? You
were saying? Yes, definitely. My barber is definitely he's been incapacitated by the coronavirus, so I did a little trimming yesterday. We'll probably do a little bit more this evening. But he said that I can probably see him hopefully sometime next week, or he might come to see me.
Oh, well, you know, the good thing is you get to grow a good beard. I never get that far with mine. So I always have to cop out in like another few days. Mine just doesn't get like yours. And the good thing is you'll be ready for a good Santa Claus role by the time December comes around.
Yeah, by the time December comes around, I've actually got a friend that supplies what they call Black Santa Claus, and he's been doing that for a number of years, and he was teasing me that he's going to hire me next year. He's done it now for 2 years at the Cultural Arts Center that I work at.
Okay. Well, that'll you'll be ready. You'll be ready. The beard will be ready.
Be ready for it, totally.
That's it.
But I don't know if I want that role. That many young kids running around harassing and torturing you. Not sure I want that, but
I had a friend of mine who did that once, who did some photography at a mall, who he did the job during Christmas, and I don't think he ever did it again after that.
He was through after that. He was like, nope, don't want to do it anymore. You can't make me do it.
If you've ever seen, tell me,
how did you decide to do this whole spinning social thing? Because I'm just fascinated by it. Like I told you, my dad's a photographer, and he's glad that you liked his title, as did your buddy liked that title, Bamboo Turtle, because I told him about that a couple of days ago that I had.
It's a fascinating title. I mean, Bamboo Turtle. I like that. It's very exotic and it's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, he's always had an interest in both of those things. He's actually grown bamboo and he's collected a number of turtles for many years and has some fascinating turtle stories. Like he went to China and he kidnapped a turtle, and then he had a land tortoise.
he kidnapped a turtle.
Huh? Yeah.
He kidnapped a turtle.
To the United States. But he also had a turtle that was a land tortoise, Buttercup, that lived in the back of the house, the back of his house, in a doghouse, and lived a pretty good life. I mean, turtles live long lives, particularly the big turtle, so it probably didn't live as long as most turtles do that of that era, but it was a adorable turtle in the back, and he loved hanging out with that turtle.
Yeah, no, they there's a place by me over here in Ramsey, New Jersey, in a place called Allendale. And there's a nature preserve there called the Celery Farm. And I go there for walks and stuff. And I didn't realize until one day I was by the pond lake area that I saw these two humongous, I mean, the biggest I've ever seen. They look prehistoric, snapper turtles. And they were so big that I didn't know what I was looking at first. I'd never seen a turtle this big. And at least in this part of the country. I mean, I've been to St. Lucia and other places where I saw 800-pound leatherback turtles nesting on the beach at midnight one night. But on a safari thing, I went on the beach. But I never saw them in this part of the country. So, but anyway, yeah, they live a long time, I was told, and they're just incredible, you know. So, but anyway, but about your question, you know, how I got into this. Well, I always had it in the back of my head that I was going, I wanted to learn years ago doing voiceovers and stuff. I was always interested in that because I was told years ago that I had a really good voice. Mm-hmm. So I thought about it, but I never did it. So then I had been thinking for the past 3 years or so about doing a Spin It Social type of show. But when live streaming started to really come into play, but I really didn't have any focus, pardon the pun, on it. You know, but the thing is that I had to find a reason. I didn't want to just do a show just to do a show.
Right.
So I had a lot of topics, a lot of ideas, and it could have been very well-rounded or it could have been totally something different. When this COVID crisis hit, I was just starting to teach at FIT and teaching social media to photography students, of all things. So I thought about it when this COVID crisis hit and photographers were losing jobs left and right. Everything was shutting down. And I had this thought in my head for a while. And I thought about a buddy of mine who's been doing a podcast for a while named Robert Kaplan, but his name is spelled C-A-P-L-I-N. Mm-hmm. And Robert is a fantastic photographer who used to freelance for the Times and many other big outlets. And he had a deal with Adorama in New York where he did a podcast called The Photo Brigade every week. His is strictly about photography and, yeah, and video too and stuff like that, but it's not a social media oriented.
Right.
I wanted to make mine more about photography, social media, entrepreneurship, and reinventing yourself and all these types of things mixed into one. So I already had the name Spin It Social, which I thought was a really good, you know, handle for social media in general. And then I incorporated it a while back. And then I said, I think it'll work for a live stream or a podcast. So Sri was going full throttle with everything, teaching everybody about all this stuff. And I decided that I was going to immerse myself in it. And I found my reason. My reason was photographers were losing their jobs left and right. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, this is my chance. I don't have a lot of money to give away. I can't go running around the way I used to because I have a family and I can't afford to be running the streets and getting infected by the virus. Not that anybody can, but if you have an assignment, you have an assignment. You're doing your job. My job is not right now to go out and just document the streets because I'm not earning a living from it. And even then, I mean, you don't have to earn a living to do something, to document something. Mm-hmm. But I have a family and I wasn't going to put myself at risk that way. But I wanted to give back. So how could I give back? I thought about it and this was the solution. Hone my skills and really put the pedal to the metal and immerse myself in this stuff and learn it real quick with this great platform called StreamYard and do it. So, and bring photographers on, talk about their journey, talk about their work. And also main thing is get them a lot of play. So this way, when this crisis subsides, hopefully one day, we don't know when, this may go on for a really long time. My gut is telling me it's going to be a lot longer than people think, and people better get used to this for a while. I don't know if we're going to be quarantined per se for a long, long time. There's going to be restrictions, whatever it's going to be. It's going to be a different way of life for a while. So I wanted to help, and this is my way of helping. My way of helping is bringing one or two photographers on a week. I'm saying two because I'm planning a show from maybe later this month or sooner, maybe a few weeks from now, where I will I'm going to try to bring on three photographers at once and have, because they're all doing a similar subject. It just fell in my lap this weekend, like one, two, three. I found one, then I found another, and then somebody told me about another, and they're all doing great work. And I don't want to let the cat out of the bag as to the topic yet, but it's phenomenal work doing photography based around the crisis right now. And I think it's going to be a great show because one of them is getting a lot of play right now and the other two are doing good stuff too. So I might have a group session where we discuss the topic that they're doing, show all the work from all three of them, let them talk a bit too. I'll moderate it and go with it. You know, learn as we go, do great work, and we're all doing something productive right now, you know?
Sounds great. Now, how are photographers doing in terms of business? I know that Sri had one of the editors on, and they were talking about how a lot of newspaper reporters are working from their home, trying to cover stories from their home. And right. I imagine it's kind of hard for a photographer, like you said, to do that if they've got to go out and cover. But I do have friends in the TV field, right, and a lot of them are actually the on-air talent is doing stuff from home and doing reporting or anchoring from home and trying to do stories in that way. So I just wondering, in this current environment, how are folks navigating it as best you can tell?
Yeah, no. Well, that's the interesting thing that I started to dive into this week, because my mindset was that so many people are being shut down, and there's a lot are. But so you have three segments. You have the editorial, you have the commercial, and you have the freelancers that are all over the place doing many different things. That's the three groups that I'm thinking about right now. There's probably a couple of more. So with the editorial, they have assignments and things like that. If they're lucky, they have enough assignments. I don't know how many assignments are being given out right now. I mean, everything is COVID related. So the chances are there are plenty of assignments, but I think it's also up to photographers as usual to also be thinking and propose things. Mm-hmm. I think that's always been a real important thing for photographers to use their own minds to come up with their own ideas for assignments and then pitch them. So that's one. Commercial is difficult. I mean, everything's shut down. I mean, how much you can't do production on somebody's corporate lawn, you know, and things like that. Now, then you have the freelance photographers who are I'm starting to hone in on what they're doing, zoom in on what they're doing. Now, they're the ones that are impressing me right now, like the three that I'm talking about, because you have Sally Ryan, who's in California, who I'm going to be bringing on. And like I said, I may bring this, decide to do a group thing if I can put it together. I invited Sally on first. I'm hoping she's okay with it. If she didn't, we'll do a solo show, but I'm sure she will be. I think a group thing will be great because it'll really lend itself to a great discussion. And I think photographers want to help each other that way too. And they're all in different parts of the country too. So Sally's in one part of California. This other person who I found, her name is, let me see if I can find it here. Didi von Botch or Bach. I think it's Botch. She's in San Francisco. And then there's another photographer based in Memphis who's doing a similar project. So I'll just talk about it. They're all basically doing projects centered around doing portraits of people in their own environments right now. So, and you have another photographer right now that's super hot that found a groove for something he started doing pro bono, I believe. And he's doing great work. His name is Matt Mendelson. And he's doing a great project with seniors in, I believe, in Virginia. And he's either Maryland, Virginia, that area. He's doing portraits of seniors since they're not graduating per se.
Right.
They're not having a real graduation. So he felt really messed up about that. And he wanted to do something for them. So he started this project where he's doing these great portraits of them with their own joie de vivre in it, you know? Like if one student is a hockey player, he's dressed up in his hockey gear, or another student's an artist, she has her paintings around her. All these great portraits revolving around the passions that they have. So his thing is like there's no cap and gown, there's no graduation, but we're still going to make them feel worthy of graduating and everything they've accomplished.
Right.
Well, I think that's fantastic. He was just written about in the Washington Post.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's fascinating. And you're right. So many people are having these life moments that are not able to be captured. I actually just came back before getting ready to do this interview with you. A friend of mine, Brother Ray Eckhart, was a activist here in the community, a very well-known activist. He does stuff from everything from anti-war movement kind of stuff to things around gentrification in a historically African-American segment of the community. And they were actually doing a tribute to him online. They were using Zoom. So there was some, I want to say when I left the call, there might have been some 200 people because he was very well-known in the community. And a lot of these activists were from throughout the world. I think there was a gentleman either out of New York or D.C. There were definitely several folks from around here. So we are finding people, even in this era that we're in, finding ways to do things and using still reaching out to people and still having some social aspect, even though they can't do it in the more traditional way. Because there were several comments on there where people were like, you know, I really wish we were able to be at home or be there with you to mourn with you in the traditional sense, but they were doing it online.
Right.
And with the daughter of this particular gentleman and his grandson, they were just tearing up, and you could see the community really trying to support them virtually, but it was still very moving when I saw that and everything, because he was very well known in the community.
Yeah, you know, the thing I was kind of semi-smiling about and semi-feeling so bad about the situation is, one is that at least people are able to do something together, you know?
Right.
So that's something for the spirit. I mean, the worst thing I've been seeing is people, I mean, we all know there's these situations going on now where they can't even say goodbye to their loved ones.
Right.
I mean, how hard? I mean, it's like, oh my God. I mean, it's like unfathomable to think about something like that. So, you know, at least with these virtual ways of doing this, as awkward as it is, as weird as it is, I'm sorry, it's bizarre. Right. We've all of a sudden moved from a regular life into this like virtual existence right now. And all these things that are developing, it's you got to take a deep breath and you got to think about it. I mean, because it's deep. I mean, I don't think where some people are thinking about it as deeply as they should, but this is a big, big like turning point in life and the world and society. And it may continue to evolve this way for a while, and hopefully it won't. But I mean, I'd like to get back to the other way we were living.
Yeah. But how do you think it's going to impact people in terms of the long range? Do you think that people will, how do you think it's going to impact? Like, I've even heard speculation as to what it's going to do for the sports world. I'm a big fan of certain football teams and certain basketball teams and things of that nature. And folks are wondering, will we come back to that?
It's interesting.
And even performances.
Yeah. It's interesting you ask that. Well, once again, photographers are going to be huge, immensely impacted by this, because unless they have concerts, which I can't see them having, sort of like they were talking about having NBA games with no crowd.
Yeah.
But you can't put all the players of the team together, because if one guy has it and he doesn't know he's a carrier of the virus, then he could infect his teammates. So you can't have that. But on the other hand, there was a big breaking news story last week that Chris Hayes on MSNBC talked about. And I'm amazed that this hasn't gotten more publicity than it has, is about the wrestling world. I mean, they're having live WWE wrestling with just wrestlers and no crowd every Monday.
Oh, wow.
In Florida.
No, I had not heard that at all. But I was talking to a friend of mine. We actually serve on a board, and they were asking me about some board representation and getting all involved on the board again. But they're part of a political activist group. But they were telling me that in Shanghai, in the Disney Shanghai, that they just recently reopened that, but that they're requiring them to have check the temperature when you come in, the QR code that I think checking certain things and things of that nature. And of course, everybody that's going in there has to wear a mask. But I think that's the first Disney property that's opened around the country, but that's the one in Shanghai. And that was actually kind of like one of the focal points when this whole thing started. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out, but that's how they're doing it. They're doing everything from QR codes and things of that nature.
It is. But, you know, to answer your question about how I think it's going to impact everything, I mean, I think, you know, the economy is going to be in shambles for a while. I mean, there's just no way to recoup the types of losses that are going to be felt in a short term to recoup, except in a long term, because it's going to take a lot of planning and strategy and everything else that's going to happen later in 2020. God help us with the elections and everything else, because I mean, when you think about it, I mean, the jolt that this is sending through the economy, from small businesses to medium-sized businesses to the biggest ones, everybody's moving at light speed right now, trying to figure out how to reinvent the wheel. I mean, we're literally reinventing the wheel virtually as we go right now. So I'm not an economics, you know, major, but I do certainly feel that this is going to be a very difficult road ahead. And I think that the number one thing, more than any, you know, I worked with a platform called Life Reimagined about seven years ago, I started working with AARP, and I was working with AARP because they started a platform called Life Reimagined. And Life Reimagined was exactly what it sounds like. It was about reimagining your life. So a great branding expert out there named Emilio Pardo, who was with them and now is with another company called Jackson. Emilio is a branding expert, and he's been around with the biggest people in the world. And they started this platform called Life Reimagined to teach people how to do just that, live with purpose and passion and reimagine your life, because many people were doing that, in need of doing that as they get older. Either they've been downsized or there's something they wanted to do that they've never done. They got divorced maybe, and they wanted to reinvent themselves and reimagine their lives, whatever the circumstances may be. So I ended up working with them. And because of that, that's what made me think about incorporating some of that feel to my show, the Spin It Social show, when we talk about some aspects that I always bring in about, I asked the photographers who are on, like Estras Suarez, who was on this past week. He started his own EMS photo adventures thing. Mm-hmm. He's also very entrepreneurial with his yoga business. You know, this is a trained photojournalist that's won 2 Pulitzers. And he's reinventing himself many times over to do things and still do his photography. So I find that fascinating, because the buck doesn't stop with photography. There's so many things that have evolved in photography that it's no longer just about photography. Now, that is the focus, pardon the pun once again, that is the core of their existence, but they need to tap into their inner passions and desires and evolve, just like we all do. So I was talking to another great photographer the other day, who I'm going to have on one day. His name is Peter De Silva. Peter's in San Francisco, in the California area. He's a phenomenal, classically trained photographer, uses cameras that most people wouldn't even see or know of in this lifetime. Old, you know, classic cameras, that, and doing wet plates and this and that and other stuff that I even have to study up on before I talk to him, because I don't know all of that stuff. But I know some basics about it. But he's a phenomenally skilled photographer, and he's in many ways going to talk about business and other stuff too, because he's got things that he's going to have to do a little differently and stuff. So I find that a really interesting part of the conversation of what I started, you know?
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. I have so many friends, they get cameras. Of course, I know you talked even with one of your guests about this. It might have been Miss Roy, but I don't remember. It might be one of the other ones. But everybody's got camera phones. Everybody's got the different kind of ways of doing photography, which means that everybody thinks they're a photographer. So just as one that is an actual professional photographer, how do you let folks know that it's great for them to capture their pictures, but at times they might want an actual professional photographer, because everybody's got their camera phone. So I know even when we've done events at the Haytas Center, which is one of my cultural arts centers that I work at, everybody pull out their camera, taking pictures, and they're not always the greatest pictures.
Yeah, you know, I always tell people our smartphones are great. I mean, I use my Samsung S10 religiously for 90% of my photography. But when I want a absolutely glorious, solid portrait of somebody, or I want a really high-res photo, I break out my big boy camera, my Samsung NX10, you know, which has a 18 to 50 2.8 lens, really sharp, really great, great depth, great you know, focal range on it, and the files are huge. So I use my, like I said, I use my Samsung for 90% of the stuff I do, and it takes phenomenal photos. But there are those cases where if you want to step up to the plate with some other things, including really solid portraits and things like that, then of course you want to have a really good pro camera too. Most of them these days, a lot of them that are being developed are now mirrorless, you know, a whole new technology, but really solid. They're developing more and more of those now, so they're full frame. When they first came out, they weren't full frame, but now a lot of them are. So that's a good thing. But I will say this, the video on the smartphones are my Samsung S10. The video is phenomenal. I cannot get over how solid, how clear audio and visual that the video aspect is of the Samsung S10. It just knocks my socks off. Just amazing.
So in that sense, you think that it's just as good as maybe some of the professional quality with video, as opposed to maybe regular photography.
No, I won't say that because, listen, there are cameras out there that are – you'll never get with a phone what you get with these cameras.
Right.
The digital Leicas, the digital high-level Canons and Nikons that shoot how many frames per second and the depth on it and everything else. No, you won't get the same thing. But you have to think about it. I won't keep using percentages here. I get myself in trouble with that sometimes. But a high amount, a large amount of people that are using their smartphones to the exceptional quality that they have are what? Think about it. They're using it for social media, right? You don't need those huge files. Now, if you're a professional, like, let's start with a certain caliber professional who's hitting all the tabloids, all the magazines, all the newspapers and stuff, you need more than a smartphone.
Right.
Because you need speed, you need different lens range, focal length, you need all that stuff. So, and flash and lighting and all that, you can't always get that every single shot you get with a smartphone.
Right.
You'll get good stuff, but not that. So yes, you need that. But for most of us, even me, my Samsung S10 is what I use because I want to get it right up on social most of the time. Right. And my phone takes great photos. I've sold many photos. I print 8x10s, 11x14s. They're actually off-size because digital is different when you're printing it. But most of the time, I mean, I sell a lot of my prints and people are like, wow, those are gorgeous. Now, I took a photo about a year ago in Central Park of you. I don't know if you heard about it, but there was the story about a duck that was in Central Park that was a Mandarin duck.
I think I remember vaguely hearing about that.
Yeah, Mandy, the Mandarin duck. And they don't know how this duck got to Central Park. But it's gorgeous. It's like the most beautiful duck you've ever seen. It's got like all these colors. Its feathers are just outrageously silky and gorgeous. And it's amongst all these other regular ducks in Central Park, you know? So it's like the superstar duck.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so well, ducks are some...
Huh?
I said ducks are somewhat superstars around North Carolina because they're actually a protected animal here in North Carolina because we have so many running around our ponds and things of that nature that actually if you hit one, you can technically be arrested and charged and things of that nature because it's a protected animal.
Right. Well, this duck, nobody knows how it got there, though. My guess, honestly, is that it escaped from some rich person's home on Park Avenue or Fifth Avenue. This is just my crazy theory. But I lived in New York long enough to see it all. So when people say, no, how could somebody have a duck in their apartment? I'm like, excuse me, a guy in Harlem had a tiger in his apartment once.
Wow. I never heard about that. A guy in
Harlem. Yeah, there was a story about 8-10 years ago. I used to document the NYPD. I documented the NYPD for 10 years. And I used to run around with the ESU units all the time. I didn't get lucky enough to beat a person around the day that this tiger was in somebody's apartment in Harlem in the projects. But there was a photo in the Daily News and the Post and all these places because ESU got a call because the tiger, I guess, had let loose peen or whatever. And other stuff. And I think the story, if I remember correctly, I couldn't be making this up now, so it must be the story, that the guy's ceiling was getting wet below him.
Oh, wow.
And also people heard the growls and other things. So this guy had a zoo in his apartment.
He had a zoo in his apartment. Well, I can't talk. I remember many years ago, my one daily newspaper that I worked at was the Boca Raton News, and that was in the late 80s, 89. And I went and covered somebody that had the big whale-like animal that begins with an M.
A manatee?
A manatee was stuck in the house.
You got to be kidding me.
No, I'm not. It was they had a beach house, and they had like one of those little inlets that came a little bit toward the house. The manatee somehow managed to get in there and was stuck in the house. It wasn't stuck all the way in. It was like in the porch part of it. But yeah, the manatee was stuck
crazy.
There.
Oh my God. But no crazier than a tiger in an apartment in Harlem.
No, that's right. Tigers, manatees in Florida. I remember that years ago there was that whole myth, and I guess it wasn't a myth, about in New York the alligator that was stuck in the commode, in the bathtub and everything. I remember that.
Being I remember. But anyway, so could you imagine the look on the ESU guy's face when he came down the rope from the top of the building to the window of the window in this building in Harlem, and the bars were on the window, and he saw this like tiger like jump at the window? I mean,
just a look, but I'm sure he was in panic mode. Tigers aren't exactly known as house cats, so they're not exactly be friendly. So he's probably already in horror mode. And you also have to wonder what kind of lifestyle the gentleman was having that he would need or want to have a tiger. Because that's making me think that he might have been involved in some sort of underworld intimidation kind of lifestyle.
Who knows? But anyway, I think what we were talking about, how I got onto that, now I forget, but I am sorry.
No problem. Like I said, I like these kind of like free-flowing conversations. But yeah, we were talking about how it's going to impact the photography world, and you were sharing some of those aspects.
We're going like along the editorial route, the commercial route, and the freelancers.
Right.
So then you have freelancers. We talked about editorial. We talked about commercial a little. And then there's the freelancers who are jacks of all trades who are really getting hit hard because they don't have staff jobs.
Right.
They don't have a lot of photographers. There aren't that many staff jobs anymore. I mean, so they don't have staff jobs. They have a lot of editorial and commercial work mixed in. And then they have all these other projects that they do. So they have to really reinvent themselves in many ways over. So these three photographers really gave me an idea for a show based on the one thing they're doing, which is doing a lot of pictures of photography of people during this COVID crisis that are stuck at home and other things, but doing it from all these different perspectives. And that's really where people need to go right now with everything, whether it's whatever they do in life, they have to, unless you're doing a regular corporate job that you're sitting at your computer all day and you're doing finance or you're doing this or you're doing that. But photographers and creative types have to think of new ways to do stuff without getting sick and without hurting anybody, of course, by getting too close to them. And other things is none of us know right now who's a carrier and who's not.
Right. Yeah, the testing is horrible. We don't have any effective testing for the vast majority of the population. I mean, we've got several tens of thousands or however many hundreds of thousands around the world that have been tested, but that's not the vast population. So we need to get more of the world tested. And I know that's the big thing, is figuring out how we're going to do mass public testing.
Right. And then, excuse me, allergy season here in Ramsey, and I'm starting to feel it. But the thing is that, and then there's the next level. So let's say we get all this testing and everything else, and then we end up in a part of this time in our life where we're going to have to, this is going to sound weird, but we're going to have to walk around with some sort of documentation that we're like, you know, COVID free or whatever. Okay. Right. I mean, Jesus, think about it. This is something out of a science fiction movie. You know, we're going to have to walk around, a futuristic movie, at least, where we're going to have to walk around with a card to pull out and say COVID free, you know, because you tell me if you have somebody's going to come to your house to photograph something. I don't even want to let an electrician in my house right now because I don't know if they're OK or not.
Yep. It's interesting you say that. That's one of the things I had to do about 3 weeks ago. The cultural arts center I work at, I'm probably the closest to that particular institution. So they had me come to the staff, come to the building in order to let in some people to put in. We're putting in a new heating unit, but the heating unit is all the way on the other side of one of our rooms. We call it our community room. But literally, I went in there, I opened the door, and I stayed in my office the whole time until I would go down there and holler and be like, "You done?"
Yeah.
And they would be like, they were done, and then I'd go ahead and lock the building up because I was not trying to have that much contact with them because, like I said, I didn't know what other buildings they had been in. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what other things they had done. So
no,
I was trying to be as safe as possible. So, and that's what I think a lot of people are trying to do, is be as safe as they can be in these kind of environments.
Right, right. So, you know, so the photographers have to protect themselves too. They have to protect their clients. So it goes both ways. So you have this giant everything's going to be reconfigured. Everything's going to be reinvented. Everything's going to be reimagined, whatever words you want to use. So we all have to look to the future right now. And that's why, to bring this full circle for a minute, you know, I came up with this concept of doing this live stream and this show, the Spin It Social Hour. And like I said, you know, I based it off my brand, which is called Spin It Social. I LLC'd that about 8 years ago because I wanted to own it. And I thought it was that good of a name. And also, I took out the Instagram handle. I took out the Twitter handle. I took out every handle. I own the website, the domain. But I don't have a website, but I'm creating one now since I'm doing this show. This is another interesting thing. I never needed a website because I'm not selling a product. I'm not selling anything. My photography wouldn't really sit well on a site called Spin It Social. I do a lot of photography too. So I figured I'll start a Spin It Social site and put all of the links and information and maybe some other things up there about what I'm doing now with the live stream, the Spin It Social Hour. So, the website is www.spinitsocial.com. So I've got the .com even. It's not a .org or a .net, it's .com. So I'm lucky. I had the vision to take all those handles out. And I even changed my Facebook page to Stefan Spin It Social. So this way it still has my first name in it, but it also has my handle in it. Because I don't want a brand page on Facebook, because I don't want to pay Facebook for getting all the pay for play on my brand page when I want everybody. My personal page is my brand anyway, because I'm my brand.
Right.
And I don't put family stuff up on Facebook. I don't talk about my wife and kid on Facebook. Well, I do joke about our kid a lot on Facebook in certain ways, but it's very creative what I do. It's not really personal. So because he doesn't like that stuff being up there, my wife is the same way. She's very private. So, you know, I just keep it all I keep it centered on the arts, on social media and all that other stuff. So I don't mind when people friend me on Facebook. I find out who they are first, and then I let them into my world. And if it becomes really big that way on my personal page, then I might have to start a brand page or a community page. But for now, it's fine, you know?
It's working as the way it is right now. Is there any kind of guest that you are really hoping to get that, even in the photography world, that you don't have access to yet? Is there like your dream person that you want to get on Spin It Social that you don't have yet? Because like I said, you've got some amazing guests.
I'm working on it right now, actually. And I don't mean to say this, but this thing I can't say yet because I'm in conversation with them and it's so big that I don't want to put a monkey wrench into it. And also, they're very private, but they're incredible photographers. And if I can get them on my show together to talk to them about the history of their work and many other things, I think everybody will say, wow, this guy really wants to make an impact here because he's bringing on photographers of all different calibers. You know, my goal with this is not to bring on only superstars, is not only to bring on Pulitzer Prize winners, and it's not only to bring on photographers that have jobs. My main goal with this is to bring on photographers from many different walks of life, but mainly photographers who are struggling. And I want to remember that focus because it's crucial and it's important, because the mission at hand is to get them and gain them more exposure. So that's the mission at hand. Some staff photographers will get through this. Some editorial who have huge clients will get through this. But the rest of the – and they're feeling it too. I don't mean to belittle the fact that they're not feeling it. We all get used to certain lifestyles and things. Mm-hmm. And just because you've made it at a certain level of photography doesn't mean people should look at you like, oh, well, he's got a job. He's going to be fine. You know, everybody's got a different scale of living, and that doesn't mean that it's not hurting them. You know, they've set their life in a certain way with certain expenses and other things. They may have to cut back, and it may be a crunch time for them. But there's a whole bunch of other people out there who are going to be struggling severely to gain exposure and other things and get jobs. So if I can help in my little way by having a bunch of photographers, most of the photographers I have on are people that are going to need the work, then that's what I'm aiming for. But I'm also looking to balance it with very photographers who have got great businesses, how they're hurting and what they need to do to reinvent, whatever. We're all going to feel this in different ways. So yeah, I'm aiming high for certain things, but I'm also trying to maintain the focus to bring on photographers that need the help, because I really do want to help them. I'll give you, for instance, there was a photographer, a friend of mine, who actually just reminded me. I'm going to write it down right now so I don't forget while I say this. His name is Justin Burl. And the reason I'm going to call Justin or hit him up is because his brother years ago really was good to me. And he's a great guy too, so I would have him on anyway. But Justin's brother was a detective in the a cop in the NYPD. And he was also one of the cops that worked on the pile down at, on 9/11. Anyway, Justin, he is one of the main sports photographers in Pittsburgh. And he photographs the Penguins, the Steelers, the 76ers. You know, many different sporting events, concerts. Mm-hmm. And I was having my first show, I think it was, and I was talking about things and something else. And he chimed in, you know, if you ever want to have me on. And I said, yes, I do, Justin, because I want to help and I want to have you on. So I want to hit the whole spectrum of photographers, you know, and video people, too, now that you say it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, video photographers can be quite interesting. I know some that are here in the North Carolina area, and they often have interesting stories. One of the things I think you might have asked one of your other guests, and I don't remember which one, but I'm just curious as to what you think about it, is the whole concept of objectivity. Because I know they're always asking journalists to be objective, but I oftentimes find photographers even more so. It's harder to be objective when you're in the middle of things. You talked about your work with the NYPD, and sometimes you might have seen things with the cases that they were covering that you were trying to get the picture of whatever that horrible crime was or that was going on. Right. And the same thing with even like some of the political activists. I have a good friend, Jenny Warburg, who does a lot of, she's actually done work for the New York Times. And she's done a number of works as a friend, family friend of both me, my dad, and several others lives here in North Carolina now. And she does some great work, but a lot of her work is around activism. She did a lot around the marches that Reverend Barber was doing. So I do think that sometimes the photographers are very much caught up in what's going on. So they're trying to be objective, but I wonder what your thoughts are as far as objectivity in the field when you're doing the work.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when you're around situations that are taking place right in front of you, and you're photographing them, your job is to get the picture. Your job is to document what's going on, true to form. There's no pulling back. In terms of something that may go down, for instance, let's say if you're working with a group of people and something goes down that, you know, maybe that photo shouldn't be made public. I think that's could be one thing. You know, I've never been in that situation. But the bottom line is that if you're covering a story, you have to cover it true to form. And if it's part of an assignment, or if you're getting a picture of something that's developing in front of you, whether it's good or bad, I mean, you have to be the journalist that you're trained to be and document what's really happening. And, you know, I'm sure there's been situations where people have had things that they've had to say, wow, if I put this forth, I'm going to have a certain group of people probably maybe not so happy with me, and then other things. But, you know, it depends on photographers I know cover the story, and whatever the story is gets put out there. So that's how I've seen it, you know, being objective about things. It's part of being who you are. I mean, listen, there have been many photographers that have been in tremendous conflicts out there. And they've had to document some pretty gruesome and other things, but thanks to their work and thanks to them telling the story the way it needs to be told, the truth was told. Okay. I mean,
yeah, I remember one of those photographs that you were talking about. And I think when I first went to journalism school, it always stuck with me. And that was the one during the Vietnam War, where you literally saw that person being killed. And I don't remember the name of that photograph, but it was literally during the Vietnam War, and you saw.
Oh, you're talking about where the general from the war. I don't know if it was a general or if it was a high level police official shot the guy. Right, and they captured that photograph. Yeah, exactly. I mean, especially during war, Vietnam and other things. Oh my God, the photos that came out, that photojournalist captured. Thank God they were there to capture the real story. You know, so the job is there, and that's what we're trained to do is be photojournalists, and just like reporters, tell the story. We're not there to take sides.
Right, and I think a lot of people even credit possibly even that shot as being one of the shots that put an end to the war. I know a lot of people, when I was a kid, that would have been in the 60s, because I'm now in my late 50s, but in the 60s, a lot of people credit the whole images that people saw of the dogs and the water on the civil rights struggle as being the kind of things that crystallized the nation's view of what was going on. And I'm even wondering the same thing with some of the shots we're seeing coming out of the COVID battle, because we're seeing some very poignant shots coming out of the COVID battle that are highlighting some of the disparity in our healthcare system that exists and everything.
Well, that's a really important point that you bring up, Mark, because, you know, you having been, you know, being a seasoned journalist and doing many other things too, is that, you know, a lot of people in life, and I've had this happen to me many times where I've been on the streets taking pictures and people get really furious with me over taking a certain picture. Or I remember once I was on a train, I think it was about a year ago, and I was taking a photo of, I found it very interesting. There were three people sitting across from me, all women, and one was reading in the middle, and the two on both sides of her were using their smartphones. So I just found it to be a very interesting photo because how our culture is just so digitally oriented now that I found the contrast between two women using their cell phones and the one in the middle totally into her book, very interesting, artsy, you know, nice photo on the New York City subway. So I was taking the photo in a very discreet way without them knowing. So I was holding my phone on my lap, the way you can hold your smartphone, and I had it in position so I know how to do this as a professional, and I was able to take the picture without looking at them directly so they wouldn't know and wouldn't ruin the moment. Well, this woman sees me across from me, and who wasn't one of those three. And as I took another shot, I saw her get very upset with me. You could tell she was getting very flustered and very upset with me because she thought I was doing something. I think she thought I was taking pictures of their legs, or I was trying to take a picture under their skirts or whatever. That's the impression I got. Sure enough, I was right. The minute the doors opened and one of them got off, she turned to the other two and said, "Did you know that this pervert was taking your photos?" And I looked at her and I said, "Ma'am, first of all, you really need to think about what you say before you accuse somebody of something so serious.
Right.
And at least ask what they're doing, or, you know, but don't come out in the crowd and say this pervert was saying you could get me hurt like that, first of all. And second of all, it's just really a horrible accusation. I'm a street photographer. I was taking a very nice photo of these ladies. I was not putting the camera under their skirts. And you have a serious apology to issue to me. And also, I think that was really just wrong." I thought about it. I looked at the ladies. I said, "Ma'am, I'm sorry if I ruined your day for a second there, but I was taking a very artsy photo of you." I said, "Do you have a problem with that?" And she said, "No, I don't have a problem with it." And I turned to the lady who accused me of this, and I said, "It's very interesting, as I was getting off the train, that they're not upset with me, but you are." No. I said, "So I think you need to think about things before you act like that again in the future." And to not cause any more problems, I was one stop away from my stop. I actually got off the train and just walked away because I had a feeling this woman was going to take me on and debate me about this. And I didn't want to get into it in a closed car on the New York City subway. So I've been around New York my whole life. I know how to just not encourage, create more problems than they're worth. So I got off the train and I just walked away. And the picture I took was okay, but I didn't even decide to use it afterwards anyway, because it just left a taste in my mouth that the photo wasn't a Pulitzer Prize winning photo and it wasn't something that was going to go down in the history book. So I just kind of, I just let it go, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, though, that whole concept of digital and how people do digital now, because I've actually seen, I don't think I've been guilty myself being a older single person, but I do know friends of mine that have gone on dates, and I think they spend more time on the phones together than they do actually engage in conversation with each other. I'm like, you know, so are you texting like the other significant other, or what are y'all doing, or texting each other even? Y'all are right across from each other. Y'all really don't need to be texting on the phone.
No, well, let me tell you, it's crazy because you got kids around here that they're actually sitting across from each other and texting each other. It's a little out of control that way. I mean, I'm as hooked to my phone as most people are because I'm just, it's part of my business. And right. I'm always busy thinking of something and implementing ideas, making connections. I mean, you know, networking is a huge part of what we do. But I don't ever get to the point where I'll be texting somebody across from me.
Yeah, let's hope that's not the case and everything. How important has the networking been to your digital business? Because like I said, I talked to Ron earlier today, and we had a conversation that'll be airing on the podcast as well, Ron Thompson, who is on Street Show. Ron,
yes.
So just in your own curiosity, how important is networking? We talked a little bit about how important networking is in his business field, and right. how so he even gave some tips as to what he does with networking, like writing notes about people when he gets the information about them and things of
right.
that nature.
You're talking about Ron Thomas, I think, right?
Yes, right.
Right, who's one of Sri's sponsors.
Right, right. Exactly.
Yeah, so this is networking for, and it's part of my DNA, it's part of my life. Everywhere I go, anybody's house, any function, everywhere I go, I walk away with 3 to 5 new people in my world. It's just the way I am. I could go anywhere. I could be on a beach. I could be in the middle of a blizzard. You name it. I'll walk away with 3 to 5 people that I'll have in my life after being involved in a certain situation or being somewhere. So I was at Sri's house right before Christmas. We had just finished doing the read along at the Museum of the City of New York, and we went back to his place afterwards to decompress and have lunch. And it was a little pre-Christmas party. Renee Edelman was there, the Edelman family in New York, the PR agency, and a bunch of other people. And Ron Thomas walks in. I had never met Ron, so it was a real pleasure to meet him. He's an incredible, incredible guy, so much knowledge, such a savvy businessman, such an incredible professional, high-level guy there. So to answer your question, you know, I met Ron and now we're friends. Networking is a huge part of my life and everything I do because I get really jazzed and I get really I just love to meet people and hear their stories and trade stories. And I'm what they call in Yiddish in the old days, a kibitzer, right? I can kibitz with the best of them. You know, I just be talking and it's part of being a Greenwich Village kid. You grow up kids from anywhere, but a Greenwich Village, there was something about living in a village in the 70s and 80s and 90s. It was such a lively, such a energetic and spirited place that you couldn't live in the village and not – I couldn't live in the village, at least, and not turn out the way I did, which is a consummate networker and people person, you know?
And I've seen a lot of that from people around that New York area. And I'll tell you why the friendship is there, but we're actually somewhat in, some people would say related, and I'll explain their relationship in a minute, to Leah Sopsey, who is a well-known photojournalist and things of that nature here in the area. But her mother, who's actually the significant other of my dad, is Linda Bellens. And Linda Bellens was very much involved in the New York area and is part of that New York Jewish community and things of that nature, and is now part of the Kipp schools and things along that line. So she's definitely involved in a lot of things around that area. And she's been a part of my dad's life now for probably about 20 years now. So they've actually been, might as well be husband and wife, even though they lived there separate existences and things of that nature. But they definitely are considered themselves, they're each other's partners. And I just see that from those Leah, Adam Sopsey, who's a sports writer and does some other things. And those are Linda's kids. So I've seen that kind of mentality from that background of New York. So
yeah.
I've got that. And I've got some other friends that have come from the New York area, both the African American community as others. So it definitely seems like that's just part of the New York mentality. What do you say to people that are afraid of New York? Because to me, it's been a minute since I've been up to New York. I need to make a return trip there whenever COVID releases its vice on the country and everything. So I do need to return back to New York and D.C. and some other places. But I actually love the environment of the city. And even when it's buzzing and crowded, and I know it's not right now because of everybody being under lockdown, but I actually enjoy that kind of environment and going to the museums and things of that nature. But I know others that are intimidated by that. But to me, New York seems to be one of the most photographic country cities in the world.
I live in Ramsey, New Jersey now, so I'm out of the city, but I go back as much as I can because I always have, and no disrespect to where I live up here in the suburbs, but as I always say to people, and it's the God's honest truth, nothing gets done up here networking wise, a little, very little. Everything gets done in the city. So when I go to New York, you know, my creative juices start flowing. All the little sparks start going off in my head about networking and everything. And I always come back with great ideas and I always end up meeting people. But, you know, New York is interesting because, you know, I'm a born and bred New Yorker. So I'm old school New York. And I also, I go back, my family goes back 3 generations in the city, you know. So it's really important for me to always maintain that and keep that true identity. But New York is interesting now because I don't want to slight anybody who lives there now who hasn't been there their whole life. Right. But I will say this, and this is a fact. True blue New Yorkers no longer exist. There are very few. There are very few. You could probably count them in the dozens, or maybe a few hundred. Let's not get carried away because it is a big city. But the way it used to be, many people live in New York, and New York has become a very, especially Manhattan and Brooklyn, has become a very wealthy, well-to-do enclaves of people. And a lot of people who live there now don't always live in New York. They have an apartment there. They go back and forth. They have other things. Very few born and bred New Yorkers, true blue New Yorkers left. Now, I'm not being this pretentious old school New Yorker that says I'm New York and you're not. But I think to this day that New York still will always have a spirit to it. And people that live there even most of the time still become real great New Yorkers and consider themselves New Yorkers, which they are after a long time. And it takes a hold of them, you know? And I think New York gets a bad rap in a lot of ways, you know? And I think we're seeing a lot of the beauty come out right now, as it does with, unfortunately, with a bunch of tragedies that happened during 9/11. It's happening now where people rise up and they take care of each other and they look out for each other and they do right by each other. So I'm hoping that the big lesson that comes out of this crisis is that people don't forget all of the people, the essential workers. I know everybody's talking about this, but I'll say this as a true blue born and bred New Yorker. I really hope that people don't forget about people because I got to tell you, they give so many people a hard time in many ways throughout the year, whether it's the MTA workers or other people out there that do all these jobs that many of us wouldn't be able to do because we don't have the energy to do it. We don't have the drive to do it. It's hard work. And, you know, we're doing other things in life, but essential workers out there deserve a lot of the praise because right now that city would be shut down if it wasn't for them. Shut down. Nobody would be getting their food. Nobody would be taking the trains. The streets would be filthier than filthy. I mean, New York streets are never 100% clean, but they're better than what they used to be. But I think it would be really bad if they weren't around. And we're very lucky, you know, people are very lucky to have them. So I hope that people don't forget that because people have short-term memories. And I hope they don't forget that and go back to the way they were, you know, and remember how important these people are. And don't just call them heroes now and then forget about it in like a year from now. Because hero isn't a thing to throw out there just because they're helping you out to get your bread, your cheese, and your coffee every day. They're there every day doing this job. And, you know, give them some slack because they have hard lives.
Oh, it's a very hard life. And it's actually funny that you said that about not that many authentic New Yorkers there, because that's actually the argument that people have even here in Durham, North Carolina, because so many people have been actually moving down here because the cost of living is much cheaper than in places like New York and D.C. and things of that nature. So a lot of the residents that are from here are like wondering how much of the population is actually tried and true Durhamites, as we call them. So that's actually been the that view is seen on both sides. So I've seen a lot of people that have moved here from around, and they're doing a lot of the business development here because, like I said, cost of living is cheaper. The cost of even doing business here is probably a lot cheaper. So even the business people are moving down here. So folks are looking at these high rises and seeing the gentrification.
That's right.
And wondering about the impact of it on the economy.
Well, that's
true. And you're also right about the whole thing about having that appreciation for the jobs, because I know friends of mine that are all sometimes they'll complain about certain communities having certain jobs. I'm thinking about like even some of the Latin Americans working in construction and in janitorial fields. But then if you ask those same people if they would do the job, you couldn't pay them to do the job because they don't have the they think that it's something that's beyond what they want to do. And they don't even want to learn the skills to do the job, even though some of these people are getting paid much better than some of our professionals. I know I have an uncle who's fighting a lot of health issues right now. He's an older uncle and everything, but he's doing well. He's had several strokes and things of that nature during his life. But his parents had a plumbing company. And so I know how much plumbers can make and how much welders can make and things of that nature. And some of those plumbers and welders make a lot more than even some of our doctors and lawyers do.
Oh, man. Hell, they do. You become a master plumber, man, what they call a master plumber, and you achieve that level. You can make a lot of money. I'm sure some of them have some beautiful houses, you know, and stuff. So, listen, my mother was one of the first New York City police officers in 1973, you know, to patrol with the men in the NYPD. Right. So she was one of the first women cops, number six on the list, I believe, that carried a gun with the men in 1973. So my mother was a civil servant, civil service worker as a cop. And she was out there on the streets as a woman in 1973 when women didn't want to be out in the streets in those roles. But my mother was a trailblazer that way, and she became a cop. But my point with this is that, you know, everybody in every walk of life, there's all these jobs that people criticize, and there's other things. And listen, being a police officer, it's tough. There's good and there's bad and everything. Hopefully, the bad gets weeded out and shouldn't be on the job in the first place. And the good is on there to do the good that they do, and they maintain the dignity with the job, and they serve the job the way it should be served, and take care of people from every neighborhood, every culture, everybody, and not discriminate and other things. But we know the problems. They're big. They're in every police force around everywhere. And all we can do is hope that the good wins over the bad, and that we can weed it out. Yeah. Right. My mother was a really good cop. My mother was a great cop. She had everywhere she went. Store owners knew her. People knew her. People from every community knew her. But that's me and my mom. We were like that, you know. But my point with this thing is that there were many times that she went through that job where people, you know, didn't appreciate her for a lot of the things she did for many reasons. But she worked hard and she did a really hard job. So we have to look at each job as of those types of things. Some people wouldn't even know what it's like to do those types of jobs, you know? Yeah. So until you've been in the role, you can't always speak of it totally, you know?
Right. I want to wrap up the conversation. I want people to know how they can get in touch with you and let you get back to your family and things of that nature. But one, if you show people how they can get in touch with you and about the time of your next Spin It Social, I think you've got Susan Portnoy on, if I remember correctly, as the next guest. So if you'll tell a little bit about that, and also how they can go and hear those back interviews. Because, like I said, I've been to check out all of the ones you've done so far, and they've all been fascinating, and I've really learned a lot and appreciated learning from those and everything. And then the last question, I just was question about of curiosity before you get to that is, one of my other jobs is I've worked in testing, test grading and everything, working with a company called Measurement Incorporated. And we know that one of the other big companies is Kaplan. So I didn't know if Kaplan testing was related to you at all or not.
Mark, I only wish that I was related to the Kaplan testing thing. And I'd be doing something a lot more lucrative than what I'm doing now, probably. Funny, I took that test years ago when I almost went to law school. I took that prep course,
Right.
And it was a great course. I learned a lot. I also learned that I wasn't meant to go to law school. And I was just too creative. I wasn't that type. And you have to read a lot of books for law school. And I was much more into creating stuff and journalism and communications. But anyway, it was a very good course. So no, I'm not related to them. But the other question you had about my guest next week.
The guest next week, and also how folks can reach out to you and spin his socials. Yes.
Right. So my guest next week is Susan Portnoy, and she's a great travel photographer who I envy a lot because she gets to travel the world to many different places, including she's been to Mongolia, the Antarctic several times, all around the world and the country. And she's got a great eye. She has a great feel to the way she takes her pictures, does a lot of nature photography, really skilled photographer, and a wonderful person as well. So I'm looking forward to have her on. She came through networking, through Sri. We met at Social Media Weekend and we became friends. And when I knew she was a photographer, I started digging into her work and really appreciating it and liking it. So we kept in touch and we talk a lot. In fact, many times she'll call me up and say, "Hey, Steph, can you take a look at some of these photos for me? Tell me what you think editorially. Should I pick these three? Should I pick those three?" You know, not all the time, but sometimes she'll need help with a certain project. And I love to do that stuff. So sure, I do it. And she's a great person, a great friend. So I'm having her on. Her handle online actually is very interesting. I like her handle. I think she should promote it a lot more. It's called The Insatiable Traveler. I love that name.
I love that name.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
So she's a real go-getter. So she's going to be on next week. My show is going to be on Thursday. The 30th, I believe, is Thursday. I don't have a calendar in front of me.
It is.
And it's going to be on – I've been juggling between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. I think I'm going to keep it at 11 for the reason being because of the crisis that New York is going through right now. And I'm glad he supersedes my show and the interest in my show because his is a lot more important. But every week now at either 12 or 1 o'clock, the governor comes on. And he talks about the numbers and he talks about the curve and he talks about the state of New York and many other things, Governor Cuomo. And I'm very happy that people are much more tuning into his talks than mine because he's dealing with something that's a lot more important than I am and more critical right now. So please do listen to the governor over me and help society at large. But if I have it at 11, we don't conflict. So I'm giving the governor his space, and I'm taking my own space at 11 a.m.
And I thought your governor, Governor Cuomo, has done a much better job of handling the press and the way of just getting the word out than the person in D.C. has done. I would even argue the same thing with our governor here in North Carolina, who just extended our stay-at-home order a little bit further because he's going to May 8th, so he extended it another 10 days and may even extend it further than that, depending on how things go. But he had not seen enough evidence, even though people in North Carolina are arguing that he needs to open up the economy. And he's like, "I've not seen enough evidence of the flattening of the curve, so I'm going to extend it 10 days right now." And he may, like I said, extend it even further. So I've been quite pleased with, like I said, certain governors that are doing great things in the way that they're handling things. Other ones, I'm not that sure about. And the one in D.C., the lady that's actually, I would think she would be much wiser because she's much older in Las Vegas and actually have a very good friend that lives in Las Vegas and she's trying to reopen the casinos and everything. And my friend over there has been like, she can reopen them. I don't think I'll be going anytime soon.
Oh, let me tell you, I saw the interview that she did with, I'm not going to get into politics here, but I'll just say that one thing about that one interview. There are some people that should not be doing the jobs they're doing. Let's just leave it at that. I'm not going to get into it because I don't want to get trolled, and it's not my domain. But so my guest is Spin It Social. My guest is Susan Portnoy, and her handle online is The Insatiable Traveler, which we'll put up next week on Thursday. And my live stream is on my Facebook page, which is Stefan. Spin It Social, one word. So it's STEFFEN, Spin It Social, one word, all together. The reason I'm doing it on my personal page is that I have so many people on my personal page. Once again, I don't want to do it on a brand page and have to build it from scratch that way. I've got, you know, probably 1,500 to 2,000 people that I'm connected to on Facebook. And then once it's out there in public, it gets out to even more. Right. So I'm going to continue to do that. And then starting soon, I'm going to have it streaming to LinkedIn as well.
Okay, cool.
So I'm going to do that. And I'm going to be putting the videos up on YouTube. I started my that's the only social media platform in general that I haven't taken Spin It Social out on. And I did it today.
Okay.
So if I grab that, I'm glad nobody had it. So it'll be on YouTube too eventually. But this Thursday, 11 a.m., on Facebook, on my Facebook page. And then they can reach me on Instagram or anywhere else at the same handle, Spin It Social.
I love that Instagram. I love that you've also used it for your Gmail and everything. People often ask me how I got the handle bluesradio@gmail, and I was just fortunate to get it, having one of my other shows being a blues radio show. And like I said, there's all kinds of blues radio DJs, blues musicians. So everybody thought that they would have grabbed it ages ago, but somehow I managed on Gmail to get it and have kept it. So I know how important it is to get something that fits you that also you can lay claim to. So
yeah, I mean, I've laid claim to everything with no extra like numbers, like Spin It Social 1, Spin It Social 10, or whatever. It's Spin It Social on Twitter, Spin It Social on Instagram, Stefan Kaplan on LinkedIn, of course. Spin It Social on YouTube now, and even Spin It Social on Snapchat. But I don't even use. I haven't used Snapchat, so yeah. I've done two Snapchats, I think. So you know, the bottom line is that I still have it, and I even have the .com, and I'm putting up a website finally. So even on Medium, you know, the platform Medium.
Yeah, Medium.
I have Spin It Social on there too.
You have Spin It Social on TikTok yet?
Oh, and I'm sorry, TikTok I have too.
Okay.
I did my first TikTok about a month ago. I still haven't gotten too much into that. I took this has taken priority, the Spin It Social Hour and live streaming, which I think is the future. But yeah, I've every time something comes out, I don't wait. I've been told this a long time ago. When a platform develops, take out your handle.
Yep. Makes a lot of sense. That's some great advice.
Whether you're going to use it or not, take it out because you never know if you're going to need it.
Yep. And along those lines, and then I know I said I'm trying to wrap it up, and I'm definitely, this is my last question for sure. What advice would you give to people that want to, what advice would you give for both photography and for the whole concept of digital media and things of that nature? You do so much with digital media. So just if you wanted to give our listeners and those that are listening in the playback later on, what advice would you give both in terms of being a photographer and what advice would you give in terms of doing a digital media campaign?
As a photographer, take the picture, worry about editing and everything else later. Don't let things get in your way. Focus, always get the photo. I always told people, you know, when something's going on, pay attention to what's going on. Don't get distracted and get the picture. And also stop worrying about everything. Shoot, edit later, because the chances are you'll nail a good photo and you'll have it. If you procrastinate, you wait, you try to, you know, also with your smartphones, if you're using your smartphones in particular, I teach smartphone photography at libraries all over Bergen County and many other things. learn your smartphone, learn all the filters, learn all the little things in the settings, all these things that make your life easier, so that when the moment comes to get the photo, you're not fiddling around with it and like, oh my God, which setting do I need? You know? No, know the settings, know the filters, know the all the little tricks in your camera, because then you're able to get the photo and you don't have to worry about missing it, right? And then finally, in terms of wrapping it all into social and communications and multimedia and everything, find something that you're passionate about and turn it into a project, you know, because nothing gets you through a day and through life more than being passionate about what you do. And that's the one thing about what I do. I wake up every day wanting to do it because I really enjoy it, you know?
Yep.
And I learned that from a lot from AARP's Life Reimagined platform when I was working with them, and three people in particular, well, a whole bunch, but that whole Life Reimagined platform, Emilio Pardo, who is the VP of branding, and the president of Life Reimagined, and then Richard Leiter, who is an author in Minneapolis, in Minnesota, that wrote a book called The Power of Purpose and talks a lot about purpose and passion. And finally, a professor named Dr. Christine Whalen from the University of Madison, Wisconsin, who's also big on happiness in life and purpose and things like that. And many students who take her class say it was the best class they've ever had in their life, and they're thankful that they've taken it, because it's called Consuming Happiness. And they learn all about purpose and passion and many other things. So you know what? It may sound, when you first latch on to these things about purpose and passion, a little hokey and kumbaya-ish and all that stuff that people say, new age-ish and this and that. Right. But there's never a substitute for purpose and passion in life.
I totally agree with you. And I want to thank you for coming on. And like I said, we're going to put it into the audio form and get it onto the podcast. But I know you had some schedule conflicts, so you couldn't get on 7, which is our usual time. But I greatly appreciate you joining me here in this platform so that I can get the interview with you and we can do it. And I'm hoping that, as like I said, that things get better and we are able to travel, that I can travel to New York and actually meet you and Sri in person. I've got a whole list of people that I need to meet in person, you and Sri being on that list of the New Yorkers, and definitely Neil in D.C. and some others, Paula down in Florida. So I got a whole list of places I need to get up and about to see the barber first, then get around to traveling to see some of my new friends and friends that I have met virtually but have not met in person.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. No, absolutely. So, you know, I look forward to our friendship evolving and our connection evolving and everything else, learning more about each other. And I think what you're doing is great work. And now, is your show actually mainly audio, or is it also video as well?
Right now, it's mainly audio. One of the things of taking Tim's class is to make it have a video aspect and everything. Okay. So right now, it's pretty much all audio, and that's the way we've been doing it for
I'm glad to hear that, though, also, though. You know why? Let me say this about that. You know, this is the first year coming up when the Pulitzers are awarded in a few weeks, because they were delayed because of this whole COVID crisis. Right. But when the Pulitzers are awarded, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but this is the first year they're offering a Pulitzer. They're giving away a Pulitzer, not offering. They're giving away a Pulitzer for audio reporting.
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. So you better go on their website when you get off here. Go on to the Pulitzer website and check it out, because this is going to be the first Pulitzer awarded in audio reporting.
Okay, cool.
So I think that's really important, because my point with this is that what you're doing is still very important. There doesn't always have to be video. There's a lot to be said for talk shows and podcasts that don't have somebody's face, but you're really just listening to them and not just looking at them as well.
Exactly. So I agree.
A whole nother beast, and a very valuable part of what communication and reporting is about too. So don't, you know, I think that it's there's a standard to it that needs to be maintained, and I hope it always lives, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And that's one of the things that we're doing, is that we will always have the audio version. And actually, one of the things I told Tim is that what I'm thinking about using the StreamYard for is more like these kind of opportunities where there are people We like to think of ourselves, even though I'm here in North Carolina, Dean is in New Jersey, we still like to think of ourselves as being very much of a global market in terms of our audience and also in terms of our guests. And it was easier to interview Ron earlier today because he's in Dubai, which is a whole different time zone. I've got Andrea, who I met, it might have been through the street as well, but she's in London. So, right. Of course, her time zone is different than mine. Right. And then there was a, I've actually got one of your people, Renita, and I've been going back and forth on email with her, and she's in India. So it makes it easier for me to do these interviews at the convenience of them as opposed to the convenience of my time zone that we have our show on and everything. So it's opening up a greater network of both listeners and a greater network of guests because I'm able to work around their schedule using StreamYard. Well, also, so I'm thinking about using StreamYard more for the interviews and also having them on Facebook at the same time like this is and Zoom because, like I said, Ron was a Zoom interview and also I know that platform as well from doing different things. And I was curious to see how they worked. And they both worked about the same. I think that the picture was a little bit more on Zoom. Mm-hmm. So I got to see more of Ron's face than I've seen of yours, but it was very similar, the thumbnail picture, but his picture might've been a little bit greater and everything. And then the other thing that I was telling Tim is I'm going to use it as a form of marketing. So you're talking about digital marketing. It's like I might come on and do a quick 2 minute or 3 minute audio about what the podcast will be about and then direct people to the podcast and listening to it on audio. But it might be doing a quick pitch online. I know you've done that even with some of your things.
Yeah. I think using online live streaming for letting people know about your upcoming broadcasts and shows are very important. You know, the other thing, the shows you do, each guest is pretty much interviewed one at a time, or do you do group discussions?
It becomes a group discussion. We started when the show first started, it was started with a mutual friend of me and Dean's, and she actually was the brainchild of it. At the time, it was the Voice of the People with Ty Jones, and that was her name. But she got married, moved away from us, and me and Dean were enjoying doing it so much that we kept it going. And she has since come back and has her own podcast. Wow. She's a breast cancer survivor now, so hers focuses more around some of those things. But we've kept ours going ever since for the last 5 years. So when we first started doing it as the two of us, it might have been one, maybe two guests at the max. But then I would invite two or three people on. And that's the one thing that I do like more about that environment versus what we've done here is that when it's the show on the 79, I might have three or four guests and it becomes more of a dinner party. So it's kind of like what you just described when you and Tree got together. So I do let them interject. Like this last week, I had an amazing foursome. It was all four women. I know Tree's really been big on getting women in the media and women attention. So I had Yvonne Holly, who was actually, it's actually Yvonne Holly Lewis, but she is running as a Democrat for Lieutenant Governor here in North Carolina, and a good friend of mine, Jan, he's actually referred her to me, and then we dialogued back and forth, and she came on. Mm-hmm. Sharon Hill, who's a motivational speaker, was on, and then I had Maureen Edwards, who is, I think she might have been on a free show, but or at least was one of the people that, like me and you, sometimes were just watching the stream and everything and making comments, but she's an educator out of New Jersey and is an author herself. And then the last one was Mona Shakes, and Mona Shakes is a friend of Lippy Roy's and is a stand-up comedian and does the things promoting comedy, particularly in non-traditional markets like the Asian comedians, African-American comedians, Latin comedians and stuff of that nature. So she was on cracking all kinds of jokes. Actually, she started off the show, and then Yvonne Holly, the Lieutenant Governor, came on. Then Sharon came on, and I think Maureen was the last one. I might have had Sharon and Maureen in backwards order, trying to just remember off the top of my head. But it was just a great conversation. But there was a lot of dialogue and interaction between them. And sometimes that's even created businesses, because I know one of the shows I had a person who was involved in a social justice interest or movement. I can't remember what it was. But then I also had an animator. And I know who it was. It was I don't think it was Sonny Slaughter, but it was somebody along those same lines of doing some activism work. And they met these artists that are doing work around activism, but they're doing it using their platforms, which is filmmaking and cartoon stuff. And they have since networked and everything. So
yeah, that's a wonderful thing when that happens. So, you know, but, you know, I appreciate you accommodating me with the, and I apologize for any fluctuation in my schedules. Life's been crazy lately. So, you know, everybody's moving and juggling and flip-flopping. And I'm just going with the flow these days, you know? So
I think a lot of people are doing that.
Yeah, but thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
No problem. I enjoyed having you on, and I'll definitely be reaching out to you. And of course, we'll keep in touch on through Shree and through the other platforms. But
Talking to you more. Anytime you want me to jump on about something, or you feel I fit in with something, please feel free. I love discussing just about anything.
Okay, sounds good. Just really quickly, you said you do know. And then I'm gonna leave it alone. You said you do know Jenny, and if so, do you have any stories of Jenny Wahlberg stories?
I don't, but I do remember she's a very good photographer. I do remember her name being in the Times all the time. I remember editing her photos. If you ask me to pick a single photo from her right now with everything that's going on, I wouldn't be able to go back that far. But gotcha. I did edit her photos when I was in the Times Wire service and remember seeing her name a lot. She was a very, very steady freelancer with the Times, and I remember seeing her credit a lot. So, I always tell all photojournalists, I may not remember every photo you've taken, but I do remember if you were a really good photographer, and she's a very solid photographer.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. And I'll let her know, like I said, she's a family friend, and there's quite a few photographers that are connected to me because of my dad, and I also worked at the Arts Council many years ago. So most of my photography friends are actually what people would consider artistic photographers. Like I've got a good friend, Titus Higgins, who was one of my former bosses at the Haytai. He was the program director, but he now does a lot of travel photography and photography around that kind of stuff. But he does it mostly in museums and art galleries.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love photographing in museums. That's a whole nother discussion.
Oh yeah.
All right, cool. Man.
Thank you.
All right, Mark. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Do the same. Be safe.
Okay.